So, like, we really don't want to talk about Conscience of the King, do we?
Oh, I want to talk about Conscience of the King.
You do?
Because you know the first 2 minutes of that episode, there was at least one nerd who flipped the fuck out because he thought that they had preempted Star Trek for some Shakespeare show.
All right.
So you know that that happened.
All right.
And you know that this episode was not originally written for Star Trek. This episode was written for about six other shows beforehand, starting off as straightforward mystery shows. And eventually, like, as it got rejected, like, the guy just got desperate and just like, all right, fuck it. Like, Star Trek's looking for scripts. Like, and just hastily, because this has nothing to fucking do with Star Trek.
So you're with me, right? This is not a very good episode.
I thought it was hilarious. I loved the shit out of this episode because it just, what was the fucking point of it? It was just,
I don't know what the point of it was. Honestly, I had almost completely forgotten about the existence of this episode.
I can imagine why.
Like, and I was watching it and I watched it and I remembered it, but I didn't really remember what happened or what the ending was. And then about halfway through the episode, when the mysterious person poisoned Riley's drink, and Riley is back, and how great is that?
Oh, is that Riley?
Yeah.
You act like I remember their names.
The Irish King Riley from The Naked Now, or The Naked Time, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My next generation colors are flying there.
Well, you know, Sulu has a different dude every week. I know.
So then I realized that this episode was slow and boring and ultimately had no point, and I really don't like it. And it's not that I don't like it because it's bad. It's more I don't like it because I just don't really see a point to it.
Well, I one of my notes is this is basically filler of the episode. Like, you have...
Yes!
Okay, number one, not only is the episode itself a filler episode, you have this extended scene that I can only describe as kissy parts, just of where Kirk and this random chick who's the actress of the daughter of the evil dictator, and he's just like giving this long romantic speech, and it's just like, where is this going? And then you have all of these, you know, we're gonna do some Shakespeare right now, and then it's just, I mean, it's a terrible episode.
I mean, the thing that, well, you know, I will disagree with you that it's a terrible episode. I think it's a fine episode. I just don't think it's very interesting. And I think one of the reasons why it's not very interesting is the entire thing just feels very formless.
Well, that's, I think, why, like I said, I think this made a few rounds of a few shows. Like, it doesn't feel like it was originally written for Star Trek. Like, again, this was...
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe, again, this feels like something written for a detective show. And that might have made sense, you
It
know?
Just doesn't really seem like the episode really has much of a plot.
Yeah.
There's no dramatic tension here. Because we all know that at the end of the episode, the guy's going to be found out.
Yeah.
And
by the way, if you're a evil dictator who is trying to lay low, why do you become an actor?
Right.
Like a position, a job which is very visible and make you be, but...
And work for the 23rd century equivalent of the National Endowment for the Arts, apparently. Because there was like some throwaway line about like the Galactic Cultural Exchange Program.
Which are doing plays presented in space. A direct quote. And how much... I would go to see a play if it were presented in space.
Yes.
It would probably be the one reason I would go to see a play anymore. Like, I'm done with college. I don't need to see theater anymore.
Well, the thing about the episode is that it's definitely not something that I hated.
Okay, I can see that.
But it's not something that I liked either. I mean, in contrast to the episode we'll talk about next, Balance of Terror,
which... Well, I have my own thoughts on that, but...
I know, but...
You got to see Uhura sing a song.
Well, that's the thing.
There
right?
was a like, musical interlude. I love Uhura interlude.
There's just so much about this episode that just it just feels like they were throwing anything against the wall, and if nothing really gelled for me. Like, I didn't really care about Kirk's Woman of the Week. I didn't really care about his mysterious friend, the man in the leather mask. Who
half
had,
of a leather mask like
right.
It's
like it's just the whole thing
that was a very bad gauze job they did on them. Like, why put like black mask? Like, you know, you would think if you're losing half your face, you're gonna like put some kind of like white or skin tone, maybe not. I... like, oh, look at my fucking mask, it's made of black sateen.
Well, here's the thing, right? That guy was obviously insane and obviously had like a huge hard on for this vengeance deal he had, so I think he wanted people to know what happened to him. It's kind of like being a Holocaust survivor.
Maybe.
Like, not to, like, a huge degree, because obviously only 4,000 people died as opposed to 6 million. Let me ask you,
dictators were around at the time of this episode?
I don't know. There weren't any.
I meant to look that up, because...
Oh, you mean, like, in terms of the 1966?
Yes, in real life. Who are they? Because I got the sense they were paralleling something. I mean, like, Pol Pot is later, right?
Pol Pot was...
70s.
Pol Pot was later. I mean, you've got the Vietnamese... the Russians.
I mean, hell, just Nazi Germany in general, because there is eugenics. I mean, I didn't know if it was intended to be just general dictatorship.
I think
Okay.
And I think that one of the things about the episode, right, is that you have to remember that 1966 was only 20 years after the end of World War II.
Yeah,
and so that
was
still really
living memory.
Fresh in people's minds. I mean,
yeah.
In comparison, you know, think about... like the collapse of the Berlin Wall was exactly the same amount of time in the past that World War II was in the past during this episode.
Funny how distant that feels. Like, in the most recent movie,
way to undermine my point, Richard.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm thinking of, I mean, Hedwig and the Angry Inch has a lot of Berlin Wall metaphors in it, and, like, that's one of the focal historical events of that piece. And... that was released, like, late 90s. The movie was, like, 2000, 2001, and it feels very distant even then. And that was
okay, well, maybe a better example
would be
something that had more resonance for Americans. So the Oklahoma City bombing, for example.
Okay, because
that was 17 years ago. And that still feels fairly fresh, I would say.
Hell, I mean, you could say September 11th. I mean, in 10 years,
that's still going to feel fresh.
That's, I guess, the closest analog one can have to a historical disaster of our. Because also keep in mind, how old are we when, you know, Oklahoma City was? We were middle school or high school. It wasn't really on our radars in the same sense that, you know, 9/11 was.
Yeah. And if you weren't in middle school or high school, if you were younger than that, please do not write in and let us know, because we will hate you.
I there's a dude I work with who was born in 94. And it's like,
I don't even understand how that's possible.
I know. Like, I can have conversations with this guy. Like, he's a smart guy.
I'm literally like, what, you're 8 years old and you're working? Like, what?
How are you doing that? Like,
Well, okay, so we're kind of like talking around the episode, I think, probably because there's not that much to say about it, honestly. But should we give a quick plot summary, I guess, just in case you haven't watched it? I mean, basically, Kirk gets diverted to a planet. There's an old friend of his. They were on a planet 20 years ago where the governor killed half of the population
for eugenics reasons.
Well, because there was starvation, right? So they ran out of food.
But he's specifically saying that there was a eugenics thing, like these were the bad
eugenics. He was picking people out based on his own crazy theories of eugenics.
Yeah.
Which also, interestingly enough, is not really a word that you hear much anymore, eugenics.
I guess it's a good thing that I think it's not used as much anymore because it's never used in a positive context.
Right, right, yeah.
I mean, there was time turn of, you know, the 1900s, eugenics was a good thing.
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, eugenics, good
well,
genes.
Well, to me, it's like, it's
means,
even like,
but...
I mean, we still do talk about that, like genetic selection and stuff. I mean, like, you have all that in vitro stuff that people talk about
but
now.
But it has much less of a, because the term eugenics itself, you think of... situations, I guess, like this, where, you know, you think of eugenics and genocide tend to go hand in hand rather than, you know, a simple screening, you know, possible embryos or possible, you know, possible chromosomes or whatever, is that, you know, that's not an act of murder.
I guess for me, it's one of those words that, and I guess this is what I'm getting at, is it's one of those kind of words that sounds old fashioned. Like maybe the thing that it is explaining is perhaps still around, but the word itself, like analysis, right?
Yeah.
Like we don't really refer to therapy as analysis anymore. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, it's almost like a really, like, it's an old fashioned word, or like phlebotomy or something, you know, who knows? I don't know.
Well, phlebotomy is still a thing.
Yeah, but nobody calls it that, right?
Like phlebotomists do.
Phlebotomists do, but who cares what they think?
I knew
they're
a woman
phlebotomists.
I knew a woman who was a phlebotomist. She was very nice.
I'm not saying phlebotomists aren't nice.
No, she was fine.
I'm just saying that they should stop referring themselves
her job and, you know,
with
she,
such a crazy word. That's all I'm saying.
She mostly visited stay at home, you know, people who were too sick or old to go to the house, but still, and she felt that it was very meaningful work, and you know, Good for her.
Good for her. But not good for Kodos. It turns out that only Kirk and like 9 other people could give a positive identification of this guy that, you know, slaughtered 2,000 people.
Because somehow there are no pictures of the governor.
Right. Exactly. Well, I can kind of understand that because in terms of like an eyewitness, like on a courtroom, you know, you'd have to have people who would be like, yes, this guy did this or something.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can...
And then, why wouldn't the people that didn't die be able to eyewitness him? I don't know. The whole episode just kind of is not set up very well.
Yeah, like, they're making... And at one point, they ask for a photo of the governor.
And they have one, yeah.
So, like, one could assumingly see the... Again, if this guy is an actor who's going around, you would think that somebody would have said, oh, hey, he looks exactly like so-and-so before this day.
So Kirk doesn't really believe his old friend that this is Kodos, and he gets kind of hot and hanky panky with his daughter, who's now 19 or something, and she acts in the company with her father. And there's all these wonderful scenes of them walking across the walking across the surface of the planet, and there's the dead guy. And
I would say ultimate boner killer. You know, there's your dead friend.
So Kirk gets all weird and he starts acting weird. And this is another episode where Kirk is acting weird and people are like, why is Kirk acting weird? Oh my God. You know, he's crazy, or he's being, he's got an alien in him, or he got split in two, or whatever the fuck.
I know there's so many possibilities it could be. I guess they're just like, well, eventually we'll figure out what the monster is this week, but we'll deal with it. But
he didn't try to rape Yeoman Rand this week, so that's good.
Yeoman Rand has a great moment, by the way, when Kirk's girl gives it, because she's a blonde too, and Yeoman Rand just gives her this really quick dirty look. Well, she doesn't want another blonde on the ship.
I have Yeoman Rand watch later on, but we'll get into that. So events happen on the ship, and Riley gets poisoned
with Windex.
Someone tries to kill him, with Windex. And then it turns out that Kodos is like, yeah, I'm Kodos, but they're giving a performance of Macbeth, and oh my God, it's Macbeth. I mean, seriously, like, the subtext doesn't even exist. They were just like, this is what is happening.
No, it's Macbeth in the first play, Hamlet in the later one. After Kirk is all like, well, I don't know if it's really Kodos or not.
Oh, my God.
I'm so agonized that I'm just like, okay, we all read Hamlet in high school.
That's even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't even paying attention at this point.
It's Macbeth when they're first seeing it, but they actually perform Hamlet.
And the twist ending of the episode, because twist endings were a thing in the 60s. They really were. Like, I don't... It seems like every... I don't know.
Every few years, yeah, because...
There's a
late 90s, early 2000s was a huge twist ending thing around. I mean, Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
Well, there's actually had a career for no reason.
Well, obviously, like, Rod Serling is a big influence on that. So, it turns out that Kodos' daughter was murdering the people the whole time. And at the end of the episode, Lenore steals a phaser and goes crazy and shoots her father instead of Kirk, and he dies. And, oh, it's so ironic, and everyone is sad. Yeah, it's just not that great. I mean, like I said, it's not a terrible episode. There's some nice character moments. McCoy sticks up for Spock, and Kirk is a dick to people without ever really meaning to be.
Wow.
And,
McCoy has one of my favorite lines, though, in this episode, because, McCoy offers Spock a drink, and... Spock says, well, my people were spared the dubious pleasures of alcohol, and... McCoy goes, well, that's why, I guess that's why they were conquered. I had to turn it back to watch that line. I thought it was hilarious. Like,
which,
by the way, weird backstory. What's the story there?
There is no story there. The Vulcans were not conquered.
Oh, well, that makes it so, like, less interesting then.
I had completely forgotten about that line.
Because I thought, like, it had been, like, a...
It jumped out at me.
You know, they had been, conquered by another race at some point in their history, and he was just kind of like, oh, well...
No. No, I think the implication there was that maybe the humans were supposed to have conquered the Vulcans, which is not what happened at all. I will not go into what happened, but... Suffice it to say that line makes absolutely no sense.
Because it was good. Like, it seemed like the equivalent of if somebody from England is saying something and say, well, that's why we won the Revolutionary War, dude. Like, you know.
Well, right, exactly.
Like, it's just like that's kind of the joke of it.
That's
like,
completely the tone that is set in, but it's not the case at all.
Yeah.
And I think it's just one of those things where it's like the USPA thing from a couple episodes ago. It's like they don't really know what agency they're working for or what the government is or what this ship is supposed to be. It's just another one of those little backstory things that they kind of figured out didn't really work, yeah. and they just quietly dropped it and never really talked about it again. Huh. I mean, I guess you could talk a little bit about... There's some issues there with the episode of sort of like justice versus vengeance and which is right and which is wrong. And
yeah, but those, yeah.
but they're never really fleshed out, and they're even sort of said explicitly in the episode.
And he doesn't come to justice at the end. It's just that weird, ironic death.
Right. Like, it's not really ever resolved satisfactorily, which I guess is kind of a statement on it in and of itself. But then again, not really. And the whole, like I said, the whole episode just feels very formless. Like, there doesn't really seem to be a reason for this episode to exist. And I'm not saying it because I dislike the episode. It just, it's not one of the better ones. Mm. I don't know. I mean, there's really not that much more to say about it.
Just two very minor points. Well, a couple of things. Number one, so there's a point where whoever is, you know, killing people has overloaded a phaser and it's hidden and that's going to explode and that's very bad. And, you know, it's making this high-pitched whine, and, you know, Kirk finds it and stuffs it down the laundry chute, and it's okay. But, so last week when there was an alarm, it was silent. Now that there's something that they need to use hearing to find the location of, the alarm is blaring.
Right.
Yeah, another one of those, like, you didn't think that through. Logs. Why are logs audio, besides for the audience's benefit? Because at one point, Riley overhears Bones making a, you know, a log about this Kodos guy on that sense. I, like, would think on a military or some kind of where secrets are a thing, you know, and clearance is a thing, that they would have that. Like, again, it's just...
Well, because the computers don't have keyboards.
Mm. The computer is basically like if Siri worked.
Yeah.
It's kind of great.
Pretty much. Well, the thing is, okay, so let's get into that a little bit. The one thing that you said about the alarm, I think, is
interesting. Yeah, and it's like, I know a lot of this is just for what's most dramatic or what presents to the viewer, but again, it's, we watch TV very differently these days.
Well,
we would expect that the showrunner would have an answer for that. Well, why was the alarm silent the one week and why is it not this week?
Or right.
And he would either say, oh, well, they, you know, there was an in-universe change after that, you know, Kirk demanded that, the, or, you know, perhaps it's a different type of alarm or something. Like, you would think there would be something.
Well, I may be mistaken, but I want to say that there are two different kinds of alarms. I'm being serious.
No, I know.
I'm not making a joke.
Like, no, I know.
The one that was silent last week was a different alarm than the one that they're doing this week.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the difference is, but I seem to recall that the dialogue was different.
Yeah.
So
and there, again,
there could
I know
be
that.
There could be a difference there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the point of this week's was you have to have a dramatic, loud thing, and last week it was just, the point of it was he didn't hear the alarm, so. But again, it's how this stuff isn't thought out to a viewer from 2012. The show feels lacking. The show feels very dated in these terms when these things kind of things
happen. I can see that. I can see that. And I think
it doesn't ruin it for me, but
yeah, and I think you just have to approach it from the point of view that there are things that are just going to be a little dated,
yeah.
or maybe feel a little dated in dramatic terms. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still a lot of the show that works, right?
Yeah.
Because I think this brings up an interesting point, is that in episodes where you really loved, for example, I'm sure there are little things like this scattered throughout them. You don't mention them. And
no.
I think that's the strength of the show, is that the show is 50 years old, but it still has the capability of it holds up as a piece of entertainment and as a piece of, like, you know, cultural reference, and is something that we can really discuss.
Yeah.
In depth. And
well, we've committed ourselves to this several years.
Yeah, but I mean, when you have a really, really fantastic episode of the show, these things probably still happen, but you just don't notice them. And so I think that's more of, it's to the show's credit, really, I think. And, you know, it's interesting the kind of things that you pick up on as well, because, you know, from the point of view of myself, who obviously is, you know, I know much more about Star Trek than you do, I can let these things go to a greater degree, because to you, it's just another changed premise. But to me, it's, I recognize when they get where they eventually went. And at a certain point, these things are going to stop changing and they're just going to be consistent. Since I know what those things are, it doesn't really bother me. And I find it interesting to see the earlier ones. For you, it's more like, well, they just keep changing their mind. Are they ever going to decide on something? And you're not going to know when they make up their mind until, you know,
it's
two seasons down the line when you realize, oh, they haven't mentioned, you know, the Earth Probe Agency in a while.
Okay. Yeah, it's almost, I guess, like a band you love, their early demos or whatever. You know, you hear the scruffiness or, you know, lyrics are different. And to a fan, it's charming almost. I mean, I think you find it endearing a little bit that they don't really know who they're working for. Yeah. You know, I think you think that, like,
they're putting on a play.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just kind of, we're going to throw, it's just a general sci-fi. And certainly, I mean, there must have been stuff in Corbomite Maneuver that, you know, but because I was just loving that ride so much, I didn't, you know, didn't notice, didn't care. There was much less here to do that with. You know, it's not like, you know, you could say, oh, but they're going to do that Hamlet scene later on and it's going to be okay, you know?
Yeah, it's just this. Basically, I think the problem with this episode is this is a style of story. This is a plot that has been done many times before. This did not really add anything new or interesting to it. And there are a lot better episodes of Star Trek to watch. So I don't know. That's about it.
Now, let me ask you one question.
Sure.
Does Next Generation do anything like this? One, because, you know, Patrick Stewart, you know, is a trained Shakespearean actor. You think he would give him a chance to ham it up as a Shakespeare guy? Because, you know, Kodos hams the shit out of his role in this episode, and it's awesome. That actually was worth watching, but
I feel like I should know the answer to this, but I don't know that I do. I want to say yes, but I'm not sure. I don't know that they ever do Shakespeare explicitly, but the holodeck does afford Patrick Stewart the opportunity to play other characters other than Jean-Luc Picard.
Okay.
Actually, one of my favorite things that The Next Generation does is they set it up as, especially in the earlier episodes, they have this like 40s noir private eye that he likes to go to the holodeck and pretend to be. So you've got that to look forward to in about a year. But yeah.
Okay.
But aside from that, no, I don't really think so. Huh. It's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, curious more than anything.
Yeah. So how many tribbles would you give this episode?
5 tribbles.
Yeah. I'm going to
really
give
liked the hamming up.
I'm going to give it like a 4.
Yeah.
It doesn't really do much for me. Again, it's not a bad episode. I think if you take 5 as average, 5 is fine, but I'll give it a 4 just because there are certain types of stories that I just don't care about all that much.
Yeah.
Mobsters are one of them, and the theater is another. And I mean, I like going to the theater. You know, I don't have anything against the theater. I find it an interesting art form, but when there's a TV show or a movie about the theater, I don't find it that interesting.
So in other words, the behind the scenes making of Goodfellas the musical is something that I should not be watching with you.
Yeah, I would say so. Let's never watch that.
But you'll
That's not real, is it? Please tell me it's not real.
But you'll, you know, I have to say, I watched this documentary and it was on puppets, and like it seemed like it was, you know, modern puppetry, and they showed like little bits through the beginning, and it was really interesting. And then like they was just people talking about their puppet shows. It was like, I want to see this shit. Like, you're making really cool stuff. Like, how does that work? What does it do? That's awesome. I don't really care about how you workshop the script and, you know, how you worked with these people. And, like, that I don't give a fuck about. Yeah. Like, you know, just, you don't.
That's stuff that actors care about.
Yeah. So,
and that's fine if you like that, but.
No, it's not, because that means you're an actor and actors are horrible.
Aw.
How many actors have you met that you like?
I can't give you an exact number.
There you go.
But
is it more than one? Because it's not more than one for me.
It probably is.
Well.
All right, so let's move on to our second episode for this week, Balance of Terror.
Okay. You may
have. Oh, you didn't like this one.
Oh, my God. This was, like, one of the most boring episodes.
Okay, we're going to have it. We're going to have a serious fight.
I kind of had the feeling with me, but this episode sucked.
Holy shit. No.
I went there. I totally went there.
All right, justify yourself. Why does Balance of Terror suck?
Because I hate technobabble. The majority of this episode was spent between, oh, here's a technobabbly situation. Okay, well, here's a technobabbly counter for that. Oh no, they've done another technobabble. Like, the most of this episode is them trying to one-up each other and outthink each other. But everything they're outthinking each other isn't real. It's not like it doesn't feel like any of their solutions are payoffs in a way, because it doesn't feel like actual cleverness, because you know that they wrote this thing in and then they wrote something that can counter it. And it just seems like they were just making it up as they went along for that. Now, yes, they did work it well and they didn't make, but it just felt like, I can't appreciate Kirk making a clever move when his clever move was designed in a science fiction setting, specifically just because we need a solution that can work. Okay, well, why not, you know, give this kind of property to the cloaking device, and then we can work around that. Like, it just seemed a little too self-clever for its own good. I didn't feel like they were working in any real-world constraints with that.
I need examples.
I had paid attention to the...
Well, there's your problem. You didn't pay attention.
Because it was very... I was just totally uninterested in what was going on. I mean, to me, what was important was, you know, two ship captains equally matched, you know, communism, but, and, you know, you don't know who's going to win on this one, and the Cold War, and, by the way, did I mention that I find the episode a little obvious?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I thought was interesting. You add this... after a bit, I realized, okay, it's just going to be watching a chess game, and I don't really find that inherently interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, like, again, the plot of the episode was interesting. There's some good character moments, there's some all of that, but I felt it was really dragged down by all of the strategizing.
I don't know what to say.
I know, and I
think we need to end the episode.
Okay.
I can see what you're saying, but I vehemently disagree with you. And I think here's the thing, right, is that number one, if this is what you think technobabble is,
no,
we should just stop this entire experiment right now.
I know.
Because seriously, like, I don't like technobabble either, but I will submit to you that there is a fundamental difference between technobabble and fictional technology that operates according to some sort of logic. Technobabble is, well, we're going to fix this problem because we're going to realign the faptic modulation system, and that's going to make the anti-gravity turn back on.
Okay,
like,
fair.
That's just bullshit. And that's a trap that Star Trek fell into more and more, especially in the later series.
Okay.
Voyager especially. I think in terms of this episode, I like it because it's basically a cat and mouse game, and I like the fact that it's a cat and mouse game, and it's basically kind of submarines hunting each other. And I find it fascinating for that reason, because it number one, it introduces the Romulans, which, you know, are a long-standing adversary of the Federation. They're probably not the most interesting adversary of the Federation. They're not the most well-known, and they're not the ones that are used nearly as often. There are other ones that are used much more, the Klingons being a notable example.
I know with the 2009 movie, the Romulans got back into
The 2009 radar, movie, and also the last Next Generation movie.
Okay.
They were a big part of that as well. So from that point of view, you know, some of the things that I don't like about this episode and about the introduction of the Romulans specifically are the things about them. They're a little too Roman. Like, that's a little too on the nose for me.
All the talk about
Centurions and Praetors and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Why does an alien planet, by the way, named Romulus and Remus, which is an Earth culture thing? Like,
this is the whole thing about, like, you know, parallelism and, you know, reusing sets and all this kind of stuff, you know.
Of course.
The reason I like this episode so much is, number one, Mark Leonard gives an amazing performance as the Romulan commander.
Oh, yes.
Like, he's really good. I like it because it again, it's another bottle episode. It basically takes place on the bridge. And there's a lot of really interesting character work in this episode, because you get, again, this idea that perhaps a lot of the people on the Enterprise are not totally comfortable with having Spock there. And as soon as they're given like a admittedly a really good reason for distrusting him, because the first humans to ever set eyes on Romulans and they discover that Romulans look like Vulcans, that would be kind of alarming. Because, okay, of course, this is supposed to be this horrible war from 100 years ago, yeah, which killed, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of people and left an indelible mark on their civilization. And they find out that they look like Vulcans. And we don't really know the extent of the relationship between, yeah, Earth and Vulcan at this point. But
you know,
from that point of view, I can really see that.
I have to say, that reveal I didn't think was handled well, because initially when they see that, most of the Romulans are wearing like helmets, and then you see the captain with, you know, the Vulcan. I thought he was their Spock. I thought that they had a Vulcan on the ship who worked with them, and, you know, that's, and then like, it's shocking enough that they have a reaction shot from literally every single person on the bridge. Like, that is they take up a decent amount of time showing you everyone's reaction. This is supposed to be a shocking thing. I didn't realize what I was supposed to be shocked at until minutes later when they say, okay, here's what's up. They look exactly like Vulcans. Oh, it's a separate species. Okay, I thought,
That's fair.
I can see this episode being a very Trekkie favorite, but honestly, I think that this episode didn't do anything that Wrath of Khan didn't do better. That cat and mouse thing at the end, number one, the entire Wrath of Khan is, you know, Shatner and Ricardo Montalban, who is going to out-ham anybody. Like, I liked that.
But that's the thing, though. Like, Mark Leonard wasn't trying to be hammy.
No, of course. I just thought, if you tell me which one I would have a more interesting time watching, I'm going to watch Khan.
Okay.
I guess that's where I'm going with that. He did a very good performance, I think. Ricardo Montalban is more interesting to watch and flashier, certainly. But also, I understood what was going on at the end, you know, in Wrath of Khan, when he's like, well, we're, you know, thinking three-dimensionally and all of that. That felt like a valid tactic. Like, okay, you know, something that I as the viewer could have thought of. I guess maybe that was it. I don't like mysteries where, you know, the viewer can't think of the solution. I accept that Kirk and this captain are much better tacticians than I ever would be for many reasons, but I want to feel smart as a viewer. I didn't feel smart as a viewer during all of their strategizing. I just felt lost.
Okay. I mean, you know, I can understand your criticisms of the episode. Yeah. I think, you know, in terms of its impact on, you know, the Star Trek fandom, obviously this is a very important episode.
Yeah.
I guess I take issue with your criticisms of it more because, I'm not sure that you were fully invested in what was going on. And I feel like maybe you kind of decided early on that you didn't really like this, so you sort of tuned out and stopped paying attention. And that doesn't really work for this episode. Like, if you decide early on that this is going to be a technical babble episode and it doesn't really matter if I pay attention or not, like, you probably aren't going to like this episode. And it's weird to me that you say that the episode is about technobabble, because it's not at all.
I guess I used the wrong term there, but you're taking more of an issue with the term than I guess I intended it to be. I guess I don't care about, I don't care about chess. That's it. And this is a chess match.
Yeah. And that's totally fine then. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. Okay. But, in terms of what was established in the episode, I think all of the technology is well understood and makes sense. And in terms of like the emotions of what's going on, I think it all works really well.
Well, there are some really interesting emotional, certainly emotional moments on this. The biggest one, when they're about to be hit with this phaser, Yeoman Rand and Kirk kind of just like hold each other for a second. And that makes me wish that the show had been created in this day and age, because I want to see the conflict between Kirk and Yeoman Rand loving each other. And Kirk also wants to be the hotshot starship captain who has a girl in every port. And, you know, with that conflict being one of his main you know, driving motivators throughout the series. I want to see that.
Well, the good thing is you won't have to worry about that anymore because I don't believe we have any more Ewan Grant episodes.
I know. And, like, knowing that, like, this every time I see her, maybe the last time I see her, it almost makes it sadder for the potential that she as a character could have had.
Yeah. And I think a lot, I think she's one of those characters that a lot of fans did see the potential in and do miss. I mean, they brought her back in a couple of the movies. Yeah. I mean, they didn't do that because that she needed the work. And, no. Well, you know, she probably did, to be honest. But
but no, it wasn't a favor they did for her.
Right, exactly. Like, this was like, hey, like, she is a fan favorite. You know, she is popular. We should bring her back, and that will make them that will make the fans really happy. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, in terms of, like, episodes of the show, is this one of the best ones? No. Is it one of the better ones? Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, and I think I would submit to you that, you know, when you finish up the entire series, go back and watch it again. And it may be one of those episodes that doesn't play well on an initial viewing. You know, if you just commit yourself to it, then that's something that you may find that you like. If you don't like chess, then you may not like the episode.
Part of it, see, one of the questions I just saw this last night, and I've, you know, not really had much time to think about it, but now that we're talking about it, because I could tell instantly watching this, okay, Eric is going to have loved this episode, and he's going to be very angry that I didn't like it, you know? And, like, I have a feeling, like, if I tell any Trekkie, like, I hated Balance of Terror, I'll get punched in the face.
Oh, you will.
Why is that? What is this? And I think the answer I'm coming up with is this show, this episode shows them doing their jobs to the best of their ability as a team. You have all of the characters doing something pretty much that is just them at their best. Uhura is going to kick ass at communicating, and she's going to take the navigator chair to a dirty look from Sulu, who is sad that his normal navigator pick is not there, by the way.
Actually, I wrote down in my notes, because I knew you were going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Totally misread that look. You need to go back and watch it again, probably because you weren't paying that much attention because you didn't like the episode. He totally was looking at Uhura like, hey, baby, what's up?
I disagree.
That was a total, like, I want to bang that look.
Well, it's Uhura. Come on.
Like, yeah. Sulu wants to bang her. He was so happy that she was in that chair.
Well, did you see the way her legs and bosoms looked? I mean, in that outfit, she's...
I'd bang Uhura.
Exactly. I don't... That may not count then.
Yeah. But Sulu didn't say anything in this episode, and he never even looked at the navigator. I know. So,
well, because he doesn't need to, because they were fighting.
I think in this episode, there's more... See, now you're just bringing in, like, all this stuff.
Oh, trust me. I am bringing this into the realm.
The only thing...
Come on, this is Star Trek. I'm doing fan fiction.
Hey, listen. We're talking about Star Trek. Canon... I'm dropping the cannon bomb.
Oh, cannon bomb.
Canon is only what appears on screen. You can't start bringing in your own theories about what was going on deck 4 or whatever. Like... They never spoke to each other. Sulu Leonard never even looked at him. So just leave that alone. He wanted to bang the shit out of Uhura. That's all I'm saying.
Well, okay, I will accept this. But yeah, I like the episodes that seem to have more like the going to the interesting planets and meeting all the weird aliens. And for the most part, the entirety of this episode is there's this Romulan commander, there's this political situation, and they're chasing each other. And that's the... I would say a good 80% of the episode.
Yeah.
Something like, what is it? The Corbinite maneuver. There are so many different things that happen in this hell. Even Conscience of the King has several different locations. It feels much less vibrant, I guess. And it feels much more skeletal. What is the, you know, it feels very to the core of the show, this episode, I guess. Or what makes a Star Trek episode?
I can kind of understand that. But at the same time, I think there's more going on in this episode than you're giving it credit for. I mean, for example, you have, you know, the reappearance of an enemy that they have not fought in 100 years that they all say is incredibly dangerous.
Yes, but keep in mind every time that anything's happened on this show, they invented time travel. Episodes ago, and you said, yeah, well, that's never mentioned again. There's nothing in this episode that makes me think I should care about what a Romulan is. I know. Because we never see Baylock again, I assume.
I don't think so.
Yeah. No. I am viewing all of these as one off, so I can't say, you know, Yeah.
I think that's interesting. I think that this is probably the first episode where we have a fundamental disagreement. And I think it's interesting that it's this episode. And I honestly, in hindsight, I'm surprised that I didn't see this coming.
Yeah.
But I'm going to look at future episodes in a different light now, I think, because I'm going to be interested to sort of look at episodes as they come up and say, does this play well as a first time viewer? And does this work only if you're a big Star Trek fan? And I wonder about that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I don't feel like there are any consequences for him going into this neutral zone and all of that stuff. Like, and again, 2012 show, this would have been, this is what, halfway through the first season? Perfect time to introduce the series antagonist. At this point now, then the Romulans are going to crop up a couple times, and there's going to be a bigger conflict at the end. You know, what Kirk has done is going to come at the end of the finale, and then for the next few seasons, they're going to be at an all-out war with the Romulans, and all these things are going to, you know, that's how that would be handled. But
yeah.
It's just kind of there.
I mean, I can see, you know, the anthology nature of the series. You know, to someone who is a more familiar with television of this decade and this century, even I can kind of see that. You know, if there's one piece of advice I can give you, it's perhaps stop thinking like that.
I know,
I know it's difficult to, but it's kind of like reading Dickens and being really angry that, you know, it's not like something that was written.
No,
10
I
years
know
ago.
That.
Like, so
of course, and I'm not. You know, I'm, you know, when I'm watching the episodes, I am keeping as open to mind. I'm trying to view it with the, you know, mindset of the time. For now, but of course, you know, when I'm talking about it, I will think of that. Well, what could the show have done better? Or how could it have done it different?
Yeah, yeah.
And I did find a lot of it very on the nose. Again, this is the Cold War. It's very heavy-handed in the way it treats that. Which, again, this is, by the way, I didn't. I just kind of took the story at face value for a good part of it because the Cold War is so removed from my mindset. Mm-hmm. Of course, to a contemporary viewer, they would have instantly recognized that. The fact,
yeah, and I find it interesting that like one of the lines that you probably didn't notice, but is kind of famous in Trekkie circles is. At the very beginning of the episode, when Spock is giving sort of a history lesson of the Romulan Earth War or the Earth Romulan War, and that obviously was done for the benefit of the viewer more than anybody else.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, you know, how many of us know that much about World War One, for example? So in that sense, it does kind of make sense that Spock would, oh, well, look at you. You're so smart.
But
you know, so that's kind of like, yeah, you can kind of get, you know. But one of the things that they said that Spock specifically said was that it was done with like very primitive weapons and, you know, atomic warheads and all this kind of stuff. And even have an atomic warhead on the Romulan ship at one point. You know, the idea being that, and this is something, you know, and this is something that obviously people in the 60s would pick up on probably, like you said, almost immediately.
Yeah.
But it's an arms race, right? Like, they talk about the Romulan ship as only having impulse. It doesn't have warp drive, so it's very slow. It's not as maneuverable as the Enterprise. They've put all of their research into weapons, and they have this really scary plasma weapon thing that can instantly destroy a starship. They also have this cloaking thing because they're not as maneuverable, so they're trying to hide.
Yeah.
And so from that point of view, it's like, yeah, like this is what you get when you do an arms race. Like, you can have a really scary weapon, but if you don't have anything to back it up with, you can kind of outthink the person that has the strong weapons.
I mean, I think the show makes it clear that even though they have differences in technology, it kind of evens out. And they very specifically, I mean, they hammer us over the head with the fact that these two captains are the same person, you know, and, you know, they respect each other like very much, like crazy. And he, you know, which is also happens at the end of Khan, because he offers the Romulan guy mercy and he declines to take it. That happens to Khan as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, of course, we will not spoil the end of Wrath of Khan, but part of it felt like a I don't know. You as a Trekkie address that they have, they're pretty much the same plot.
Well, I mean,
given Wrath of Khan, why would I watch this over that? How's that?
I don't know. I haven't seen Wrath of Khan recently enough.
Really? You saw it the same time I did.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I've never really compared them, so I don't know that I'm really like ready to like compare them. Like, I don't know. Like,
okay, well, when
maybe
we watch,
bring that up when you watch. When yeah, we watch when we watch Wrath of Khan,
because they feel like the same story to me.
I guess I can see that, but yeah. I don't know. Bring it up when we watch Wrath of Khan.
I will.
I'm sorry, God I suck, it. And I can't do that on the fly. Yeah. But
another interesting, well, one character moment I did really like. When at one point Kirk's in his cabin dealing with this, and you know, Yeoman Rand comes in. And, you know, he just kind of, like, kicks her out of the cabin. Like, you know, she's trying to give him something to eat or, you know, just talk to him. He just doesn't want to. Bones come in. And Kirk immediately basically says, like, I don't know how to deal with this. Like,
right.
These people, you know, being a captain, any decision I make, everybody's going, you know, people will live or die. And if this causes a war, billions of people will live or die based on that. You know, it says a lot about the show that that's who he can be himself around and not this love interest, you know, because this episode does, you know, make if the show had continued, this would be one of those defining, well, you know, initial moments in their relationship, I would say.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, of course, that he talks to his doctor before he talks to anybody else, because, you know, he's confiding in his, you know, frontier doctor kind of thing. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Yeoman Rand, because, you know, before I said I had sort of a Yeoman Rand watch thing.
Yes.
And I believe that these are the last two episodes we'll see Yeoman Rand in. I'm not sure, but I know I say I feel like I've said that once.
Yeah, I was going to say I've been like,
and she keeps popping up again.
Surprised,
and I'm like,
every single time. Even like,
I really thought that Conscience of the King was the last time we were going to see her, and then I guess I completely forgot that she was in Balance of Terror, probably because there's so much other crazy shit going on in this episode, and she's not really in it that much. But it's kind of sad that in these like. The last episodes that feature her to be aired, like, she basically, the only thing she has to do is like angrily glare at people. I mean,
she lights the candles at the beginning.
That's true, I guess. Hmm. But like in Conscience of the King, she just sort of glares at that woman, and then in this episode she's glaring at Kirk for one moment, and you're just like, this is really sad.
She was very good at her glaring, though.
Oh, I'm not saying she's not good at glaring, but it is kind of a shame that that's all she has to do.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I really liked her. She's one of my favorite characters, and I know we're losing her. Other parallel, by the way, to Wrath of Khan that I want to... Wrath of Khan. That's how it's pronounced?
Yes, Wrath of Khan.
I keep saying Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, that's... I don't know what Wrath...
The Mome Wraths.
Right, of course.
The Outgrabe. At the very end of the episode, Spock sees this... They're trying to fire this phaser, and like purple gas is killing everybody. And
it's coolant.
Purple gas is killing.
There's
everybody.
There's a sign there. It says, I know it says it's phaser coolant,
but it's purple gas is killing everybody. Does it matter? and Spock goes in, doesn't even really give a look. He eventually saves everybody, but he immediately goes in without any regard for his personal safety, fires this phaser.
Yeah.
Basically, the same thing happens in Wrath of Khan at the end. Wrath of Khan at the end. Wrath of Khan. He sees something needs to be done, and
Wrath of Khan is a supermarket sale, Richard.
Oh my God! How awesome would it be if somebody did that?
The Wrath of Khans.
Only
for 1 week.
Goes into a situation where it's great personal danger, but it needs to be done, and he's going to do that. I mean,
yeah,
that number one is a very defining thing of Spock, certainly. But it, I don't know. I will still go that they're the same episode.
Well, so, Wrath of Khan is a movie.
Yes.
Not an episode. So there's a difference there.
Well.
Another difference is one was made in the 60s and one was made in the 80s.
Yes. Well, you could say that about the first Star Trek. And
another difference is one has Chekhov and one doesn't.
Yeah.
This will be interesting. Remember this when we get to Wrath of Khan, and I think it'll be intriguing to kind of talk about that for a few minutes.
So I just have one final question.
Sure.
So the Vulcans are all logic, logic, logic. Then the Romulans are all duty, duty, duty. I can't say that without laughing. So that's what their like defining species trait is?
Probably.
I have issues with defining species traits for one, but
And it is again, I mean, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think Deep Space Nine does that better than anybody else, because they kind of like just totally go, yeah, that's stupid too. And Deep Space Nine kind of does that a lot, but in a loving way. I think Yeah, that's fairly accurate. I think Romulans are sort of duty and sort of war you know, warlike.
Yeah.
They're warriors, right? So, you know, and again, Romulans really are kind of an underutilized species in the Star Trek canon. So, you know, to say that they're one thing or another, it's kind of difficult to. But yeah, that is kind of it. Like, they're warlike and they're very, like, honor bound.
Yeah, because I
mean, duty, honor kind of thing.
One of the implications that Spock always has is that he has to do the logical thing, even if his emotions tell him otherwise. Like, and the Romulan commander explicitly says, like, I don't want to do this. Like, I would rather, like, he basically says, like, I would love to go on the Enterprise and be totally your Romulan dude that, you know, you hang out with. Like, I will, he's like, no, my duty says that I have to self-destruct the ship.
Yeah.
Do humans have one?
Have a self-destruct?
No. Have a hat, basically. Because they do in Babylon 5. Babylon 5, we're told that each of the races has its own, you know, tendency. But the humans is that they, you know, create communities and they are able to form people around them. And of course, that show does show examples of members of the races who are not at all like that.
Well, again, if you go with that, if you go by Deep Space Nine, soft, probably. But if you go by, I can't wait until we get to Deep Space Nine. You are going to love the shit out of Deep Space Nine.
I'm excited.
Probably yes, that probably they bring people together. They're community builders, and that's kind of like the standard line for humans, I think, in science fiction and a lot of,
because it's one that we can fiction. Definitely apply to our
right,
species,
right?
Not knowing any others,
we're a social species, and so yes, of course, this is what we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a couple of like little things that I noticed about Balance of Terror on my rewatch. Number one is I love that the set design in the series, because you see little things every once in a while where you immediately know where they got it from. So in the one part where Spock is under his console trying to fix the phasers, did you notice that the grates that they use to cover up the electronics are like radiator covers?
No, I mean, it looked like that entire business was made with, like, they sent some interns to, like, whatever the equivalent of Radio Shack was at the time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, here's like $50, just get every, just get shit and, you know, make something with it.
Watching the episode, I literally paused it for a second, looked at what he was holding, looked at my radiator cover, looked at what he was holding, looked at my radiator cover, looked back at what he was holding,
yeah,
and said, holy shit, it's a radiator cover. So that was cool.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to mention that you didn't bring up, which I think is interesting, the little framing device of the episode, which it starts out with two crew members getting married and ends with the male fiance, because there's no way to, you know, distinguish the two.
Fiance.
Whatever. Shut up. The male ends up dying, and there's this whole thing about, oh, well, we averted a war, but these things happen. And, you know, at the end of it, Kirk is hugging her, and it's a nice little moment.
Yeah, but I found that a bit part of the on-the-nose thing, too, just because...
Oh, it's completely on the nose.
The only casualty was the only other character who's not in the main cast that we cared about for this episode, and it's the most tragic one of all.
Oh, it's completely on the nose. But I think in terms of like a little bit of a nice, you know, it's a way to frame the episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's all it is.
I do like the glimpses into the day-to-day of the ship, though. Like when they're just...
In Conscience of the King, where Riley is alone and he gets demoted to, and I don't want to go back to Conscience of the King too much, but where, you know, Riley is sitting in engineering alone and he's bored, basically. And he calls him to the rec room and there's just some people hanging out.
Yeah. They're just like joking, like, cause they're coworkers basically. And they're just like, yeah, I'm bored. You know, sing me a song. Okay. We're going to sing Riley a song. You know?
They don't have iPods, I guess, in the 23rd century. So.
Well, obviously, the visual design doesn't look like one like most space does these days.
All right, so I shudder to think, but I don't even want to ask this
question.
I'll
give it a 5 tribble.
All right, 5 is fine. I give it 8.
Okay.
So there we are.
There we are.
So if you have any, if you're a Trekkie and you want to yell at Richard for not liking Balance of Terror, send him an email. He gave it last week. I don't know if he wants to give it again.
mail@secondquest.vg, and I'll eventually figure out.
That's not the one you gave last week.
I don't know what one I gave last week.
You gave the other one last week.
Oh, Richard at secondquest.vg. I don't know what the hell. Let's start the bit again. Yeah, my address is Richard at secondquest.vg. I really got to get a new one.
There you go. And you can follow me on Twitter, Eric Brazier.
Soon enough, you'll be able to find my band on Twitter. We have a Twitter account, but we haven't done anything with it.
Exciting.
I know. I told them, like, can I start tweeting stuff? They're like, you don't. My guitarist is like, I don't care if you never mention Twitter to me again. And so I'm just going to take care of the blogging aspect of it. And boy,
I wish more people said that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next week, join us for discussions of Shore Leave,
which I've actually seen before.
Oh, good.
That's one of the few I've seen, and I like that episode very much.
Good. I actually don't like it too much. That could be interesting. And the Galileo 7. So until next week, thanks for tuning in. And yeah, we'll see you then.